Today is Thursday, April 4th, 2024, and you're listening to the Ask a Christian podcast. I'm your host, Nate. All right, today I catch up with a Muslim acquaintance that used to come around a lot. They show back up today, so we talk a little bit. Everyone's sleepy while we're waiting for people to show up and waking up. So it's an easy enough conversation. He's doing some fasting, ask if Christians fast, says he reads his Quran. I'm like, yeah, bro, I read my Bible. So we just kick the ball back and forth a little bit. Then we talk about the Cicada-geddon apocalypse that is soon to be upon us. So, you know, get ready for the invasion of these creepy critters. Then we talk about food. And I get hungry. So the proper way to pronounce pho is pho. You know, the steamy noodle soupy dish. It's amazing. Anyway, then we get back to Christian topics, talk about dispensationalism and Darby and Schofield for a little bit. And then we talk about the age of the earth. And usually this conversation goes from Genesis 1 to Genesis 2 in the gap theory. We take a little different approach. Today we talk about the potential gap between Genesis 1 verse 1 and verse 2. So basically it's inconsequential for anyone's salvation. The age of the earth is irrelevant. It doesn't matter. There's enough room to interpret there to basically make anyone happy. So the Bible only gives us so much information. The real point is repent and believe the gospel and receive eternal life through Jesus Christ, his death, burial, resurrection. Ask him to save you, give you eternal life, make you born again, and that is the point. As far as the age of the earth, don't really know, don't really care. But it's interesting to talk about, so let's, you know, take what the Bible does give us and come up with some ideas. But keep in mind, these are just ideas. If we start preaching them like they're gospel, well, that's how cults get started. So enjoy this podcast and do not start a cult. See you later.
Good luck.
Anything on your mind today?
No, not particularly. I just was coming in to listen. I was hoping there would be some conversation going on. Sometimes I just go through the rooms just to listen to any type of religious conversations, you know.
Oh, I'm sure there will be at some point. I'm getting an early start today, so we'll see how long it takes people to wake up.
Yeah, yeah.
You're up early.
Well, yeah, I get up early every day, you know. I'm Muslim, so pray Fajr, and then it's Ramadan, so we've been reading the Quran, the 30th. And, you know, it's harder to go back to sleep after reading the Quran, so I just be up.
So are you fasting this month?
Yes, yes.
What are you fasting? Is it one thing for everyone, or you pick something?
No, we fast from you know, food, drink, you know, sex with wives, you know, too much talking. Or
for how long?
From sunrise to sunset.
So you eat dinner when the sun goes down?
Yeah. We eat in the morning before the sun come up. Like I eat it like the sun comes up like 6. Fajr comes in probably about 6:30, 6:50. So we got to stop before that. So I usually stop eating. I get up like 5 o'clock in the morning and I eat about 30 minutes. And then I stop before 6 o'clock and then head to the masjid to make Fajr and pray. And then I don't eat again till probably 8 o'clock, 7:50 when I break the fast. I do that every day for 29 or 30 days, depending on how many days are in the month.
How much longer do you have to go?
Well, it's the 24th day. So we have either 4 or 5 more days of Ramadan. Because it's based on like the lunar calendar, so it depends on the spotting of the new moon when it ends. But it's either every month in the lunar calendar is either 29 or 30 days. So, you know, Yeah, but it's been nice though. It's been good. It's been good. Been working on fixing my credit, focusing on that, and just, you know, focus on my fans. Y'all have some type of fast too, right?
Do what?
Y'all Christians fast too. I think y'all do it differently, but how do y'all fast?
So if you're talking about like a Catholic thing, I'm not Catholic. They have organized times, like on Friday they can't eat, they don't eat meat or something, and then they have Lent. I think it's like February where they fast something for 40 days. But no, I think the biblical way is, you know, Jesus talks about prayer and fasting, but he doesn't force anyone to do it a certain time. It's just as you feel compelled, or as you're trying to, you know, get spiritually closer to God, in like prayer and fasting and stuff, that's when you do it. So there's examples like, you know, Daniel had a certain fast that he did, you know, that like Daniel, he did like the Daniel fast, people call it. It was like he just ate vegetables and stuff. But no, so like biblically speaking, Jesus just says, hey, you know, sometimes you need to pray and you need to fast. So typically it means you'll just drink water and you won't have any food. And people will do that for like usually like 1 to 3 days. There's nothing that says you got to do it a certain way. It's just between you and God.
Okay. We don't even drink water though. We don't eat or drink. Just daylight, but then we eat in the, you know, morning. So it's not.
That's just how people kind of do it. I mean, if you don't want to drink water, don't drink water.
Okay. But fasting does make you feel good, though.
Well, I mean, I do like intermittent fasting sometimes, like not even for like religious stuff, but for like health stuff. And yeah, like I'll try to do like 16 hours without eating. And yeah, I mean, apparently they say that has a lot of good benefits. So I try to do that and, you know, get in shape a little bit. So,
yeah.
I mean, yeah, religiously or not, like, you know, fasting can do some good.
Yeah, it can. It's like. Yeah, that's good. You learn anything new this month or this about your faith, about Christianity or about Islam? Anything you read that stood out to you?
You know, in my daily Bible reading, I know there's been some stuff. I usually talk about it here. Like usually I'll do my morning Bible reading and whatever jumps out, like I usually talk here. I mean, at this point, like there's no big revelations happening. I mean, I think I pretty much, you know, worked through all those, but there'll be like little, it's like how, you know, why Christians call the Bible the living word of God. Cause no matter how many times you read it, you can still get new stuff out of it. So like, there's something I was just reading. It was in, Second Corinthians or something. It was a couple days ago. And, I thought, oh, you know what? I'm familiar with that from another part in the Bible, but I guess I didn't realize it was here too. Huh, that's nice. But I don't remember what it was now, but it was a little point.
Yeah, it's kind of the same thing with reading the Quran. Every time you read it, and I think it's because as you evolve as a person, like you're reading it from a different perspective or a different understanding, so different things stand out to you, and you know, you might be able to this is what I say, like it's light upon light, like it's like you can't exhaust the scripture, like you can't exhaust the inspiration you can get from it, or it'll never run out because you're a different person every day, like, you know, and so you read it from a different lens, so to speak, and it says something different to you. So
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Yeah, like I notice that every year, because we read the Quran from cover to cover every year, but every year it's different things like stand out when reading it, like different. Yeah.
Hey Gavin, good morning. Oh, you left.
Yeah. So and I read Bible too, but I don't. I never read the Bible cover to cover, but I read through it, and something different stands out to me in there too. Every time I read, I get something.
Yeah, different. I've been reading. For the last couple of years, I'll read the Bible through, and whenever I get done with one translation, I'll go back and start over and do a new translation, just to kind of read through different translations of it to kind of show how, you know, it's all important. The same.
That's important, and one reason why that's important is because you get the range of interpretation. You get an imam, he said, that's why we should all learn Arabic. He was telling the Muslim nation to learn Arabic. He said, you got to get off the plantation of translation. Because if you're reading a translation as opposed to reading the text, like reading the words, you can't go any further than the person who interpreted the actual revelation or the actual scripture, the actual words. You're just reading their understanding of the scripture. You're not really reading scripture. But when you read the scripture as it was written, you're really getting the scripture. And you might translate it differently. Or like if you look at 10 translators, it's slightly different. You get like a semantic range of the words. Like one word, somebody might translate the word as, like, for example, as they might say serve. Somebody else might say worship. And somebody else might say, glorify, right? But if it's the same word, the word has all those meanings. But you
yeah,
think
and I've heard people...
different in English when you hear glorify or you or you think something or serve, you think something different with those English words, but that
yeah,
word,
I've heard. Well, yeah, I've heard people say you got to read the Quran in Arabic. Yeah, because what you're saying to get the meaning, and I agree. Like as much as people can know the original language, you know, do that so there's no confusion. You know, the good thing though is, I'm sure you guys have study tools and you know, like your version of. Translations or whatever for the Quran, but I mean, at least the Bible, like, you know, it's had a lot of eyeballs on it. I think more than any other book in the world. So like the good thing is, you know, we have lots of good tools and commentaries. So like, if we want to know the actual, the actual words and the languages, you know, we can grab an interlinear Bible and, use a concordance with it. So the next best thing from speaking Greek, Hebrew, and Aramaic is, you know, reading the Bible and you can see the Greek and Aramaic and Hebrew or whatever mm-hmm. above it. And then you can use the concordance to find out exactly what that word means, what those words in that sentence mean. And, you know, so you can say, oh, okay, I see how the translator got this, or, oh, okay, I get why the translation did this. So you can kind of, you can do it yourself, like kind of how you're saying, unless we all want to learn to speak Greek. Are you learning to speak Arabic?
Yeah, I can speak a little Arabic, and I can read Arabic better than I could speak it or understand it in conversation. But on the page, I can have good understanding of it. But it's also good to know the history of the word, like the etymology, because sometimes meaning of a word and how it was used is different. Like for example, there's a word in Arabic, kafir, kufa. It means to reject. It means to cover, to hide, conceal, or reject. It has that kind of range of meaning. But the way, when you look at the way it was used prior to Islam, they used it to mean ungrateful. Right? They used it to mean someone who had been given something, or you did something nice for them, and they act as if you never did it. And so God's calling people rejectors. He's really saying they're ungrateful of the favors that God has bestowed on them. God is saying you're rejecting, like, I've blessed you with this, or blessed you with life, or blessed you with, you know, this world with, you know, animals and water and rain and land and all these benefits that come from the just, you know, life, right? And you're ungrateful because you're instead giving credit to idols. Like you and you're worshiping the God of war, and you're worshiping the God of this and the God of that, and you're giving credit, or you're giving praise and worship to these other things, these idols that you make that represent forces in creation, or represent emotions, or represent, you know, human experiences, right? And you're giving credit to all these individual deities for what God has provided. And so it's like you're rejecting, but it's like you're ungrateful.
Yeah, you got to know I agree on that. I mean, you got to know how you're using the word, not just what the word is, because, you know, it's like someone will say, hey, if if you don't do what I say, I'm going to drag you out of here. But really what you mean is you're going to ask them to leave, or you're going to escort them out the door. So someone's like, no, he says he's going to drag him out. He's going to like drag him out. That must mean with like ropes or chains. It's like, no, the way he's using it, clearly he's just saying that it's hyperbole. What he means is, hey, if you're being a jerk, he's going to tell you to get out of his house. He's not actually going to drag you out. So you got to know how they're meaning it.
Exactly. Exactly. So it's just good to have that. And when I read the Bible now too, I have like this, the concordance and the, you know, the blue letter, so I can at least look at the Greek words or look at the Hebrew words and kind of get a different understanding.
Yeah, and just like that, because you got to catch yourself too, right? Because whenever you look at the words, like sometimes I'm like, well, hey, that's the word, but if you read the context, yeah, they're using that word. That word means what it means, but look at how they're using it. That's the important part.
Yeah.
What's up, Chris and Lou? How are you guys doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
Pretty good. Very good.
You driving to work, Lou?
Oh, nah, I'm in my my car, my 10-minute break.
What time do you start working?
5 in the morning.
Yeah, Baghdadi's time. You guys could have breakfast together.
Okay.
Nice. You eat cats, too?
Cats.
No. No, I don't eat no meow, no woof. No.
Good morning, Pastor Mark and everyone else down there. Yeah, anything else, Spaghetti?
Bad. No, that's it. I just listen if y'all wanna have a conversation.
Well, let's see. It's a little off the beaten trail from religion, but did you guys see about Cicada Geddon coming up? Chris, you got your tickets for that?
For what?
Cicada Geddon.
Oh, yeah, the cicadas are coming. This is
yeah, cool. Apparently more than it's been in like 221 years. So, like, we're lucky to have like not just one, but two of these underground swarms that, yeah, hasn't happened in two centuries. So,
that's fantastic.
That's interesting. I guess you can eat Z bugs now.
Yeah. I mean, you know, you need some extra protein, it'll be fine.
Well, apparently if they have an exoskeleton, why do I know this? It's made out of like,
know what you're about to tell me.
It's made out of like chitin or whatever, like the exoskeleton. So they say it's protein, but it's like got this chitin shell. And apparently this shell, when they grind it up, because, you know, they don't separate the innards from the shell, they just grind them all up. And that is like really carcinogenic and toxic. So if you want to eat the bugs, if you're talking about like earthworms or something like that without that hard chitin exoskeleton, then technically you could eat those and be just fine. I don't know if you want to, but you could. But the chitin shells on these insects with hard exoskeletons, that is apparently very toxic. And that's one of the things they're trying to get you to eat. So not just run-of-the-mill earthworms that would be, I guess, technically fine. But no, they're like promoting all of these things, including the ones with ground up exoskeleton shell powder. There you know, guys. Now you know.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I love that our elites are planning for us to eat grasshoppers while they eat steak.
What a time to be alive. Except now it's like, man, they're like feeding so many vaccines to like cows and stuff that you're basically getting like whatever vaccine they want you to have through cows. So it's almost like, well, it makes someone not want to eat meat, which is kind of their goal all along. But it's like, no, guys, yeah, go ahead. If you want to eat meat, they're like, oh, I'm not going to give up my steak. It's like, fine, don't give up your steak. We're going to poison it.
I mean, so I'm not real sure that's how that works, but yeah, sure, whatever.
No, like Gates just came out with the whole thing. He's like, they're talking about how they can like inject your like meats with different vaccines that will carry through to the end user or end source, which would be you.
Does Bill Same Gates thing. Have a volcanic lair? He must.
He is a volcanic lair. Well, right? Also like I mean, lettuce. Like they're putting like vaccines in quote vaccines in lettuce. So like whenever they like have it, you know, they're like spraying it and stuff. They can there's this whole video. It's how they kind of press the leaves down where they absorb the water. They press the leaves down, and it expels the water. And then they add this other water with like quote vaccines in this water. So then after all the actual water is expunged, it reabsorbs all this new water that they wanted to have. That can include vaccines and stuff like that. So, you know, if you're a Christian, this is the closest to hell you'll ever get. Take heart in that. I mean, I didn't mean to be a downer.
I mean, yeah. Whatever.
Chris, are you having some poison bacon and mRNA eggs for breakfast?
Probably. No, I actually just had a yogurt bowl with almonds and a little bit of Nate's honey. That was nice.
No relation.
Yeah. And
so you're saying you had a little bit of Nate today?
Everybody needs a little bit of Nate in their diet.
Don't be weird.
So, yeah, I had that and I had half a bagel. A little bit of cream cheese, you know, just in case you were that interested in my breakfast. I am heading to my office to pay my office rent and to grab a router for a construction site. And then I am off to get a restaurant open this morning.
Yeah, in Orlando?
Kissimmee, in your old town. It's called El Cilantrio. And it is a really, really, really good Puerto Rican restaurant. I highly recommend it.
Will you be staying for lunch?
I never eat at my clients. So I have so many restaurants as clients, I never eat at my clients.
How do you know it's a good restaurant?
I mean, while I'm on the job. Like, I will go there afterwards because I see everybody's kitchen. So I know the restaurants that are clean and the ones I want to eat at.
That's good. You're like an inside guy. Yeah.
Yeah, I will tell you, though, there's another Puerto Rican restaurant in Kissimmee called Pal Campo. And this place had the cleanest kitchen. I am not kidding you. This kitchen was so clean. I would cook eggs and then put them on the floor and use the floor as a plate. It was that clean. It was shockingly clean. It was like the cleanest restaurant. And it's a working restaurant. It's been a working Puerto Rican restaurant for, I don't know, 5 years. And that kitchen was so spotless. It was shocking. I was like, I mean, this looks like new construction. It's so spotless.
What's some restaurants? I don't know. Can you like trash your clients? What are the nastiest restaurants?
Yeah. I mean, like, so for instance, some restaurants are just inherently greasy. So like BurgerFi is one of my clients. And I mean, like they just fry everything and there's just fry oil everywhere and it gets in the equipment. And it's kind of a lucrative client for me because all their crap dies after 2 years. So... And they're just like, I don't understand why you have to keep replacing this stuff. And I'm like,
Is it because grease clogs the router ports?
Well, yeah, because grease gets into everything. And then, I mean, grease is not a conductor of electricity, so it doesn't, like, short anything. But eventually it just cakes on stuff and the cooling fails. And, you know, when electronics aren't cold, then they die.
Huh.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so, like, even if the fans are running, the rest of the circuits are covered with grease, and so they can't get cool.
Goodness. I've eaten a BurgerFi a couple times.
It's good. I mean, like, they do. I mean, it's not dirty. It's just, it's greasy, you know?
I like Metro Diners.
They're not one of my clients, so I couldn't comment on them.
But if they're not a client, you haven't been in their kitchen. But their kitchen's right there. You can see it when you walk in. Everyone can.
Right. I mean, they have an open kitchen, so, you know. But, you know, what you really want to look for in a clean kitchen is how does it look behind the refrigerator? Because they're supposed to clean that every night. And if they're not, then you know they're not cleaning other stuff. So that's the first thing I look for. What does it look like behind the refrigerator?
I mean, that's why chains are usually, I don't know. I get the feeling that chain restaurants are safer if they're like a, you know, pretty reputable like type chain, which I mean, if they're a national chain, they should be. So I guess it falls to the local franchise. So whatever. But I mean, it seems like they still have some sort of oversight and standards. So it should be safer. But then you have like the little mom and pop stores and it could go either way. So if you get the mom and pop stores you see in like Kitchen Nightmares, where, you know, they fall into disrepair, they don't care, they don't have enough staff, they get older, they can't clean, and there's, like, roaches everywhere. That's disgusting. But if it's, like, a mom-and-pop where it's, like, you know, these people are, you know, like, super taking pride in what they do, and it's, like, you know, they're, like, a Michelin chef, and it's, like, a five-star thing, and then it's, like, way cleaner than any chain because they keep it immaculate. But it's a gamble, right? Like, unless, I don't know.
I mean, there's always signs. I mean, a failing restaurant is going to be a dirty restaurant because when you start failing, you're just going to stop taking pride in things. And it's just kind of a snowball effect, you know? So like, yeah, I mean, if you walk into a restaurant and the place is empty at lunchtime, you probably should walk right back out because, you know, I mean, you know, like, so for instance, yesterday we went to this little, I'm not going to mention the name of it, but we went to this little faux place. Over by one of our offices for the church. And, you know, we go in there and, you know, red flag, there's nobody in there at 1 o'clock in the afternoon on a Wednesday. And I was like, oh. And so anyway, you know, we, you know, the pho was okay. It was nothing great. You know, I was like, okay, yeah, I just had pho. Okay. You know, but they had like Chinese stuff, Thai stuff, you know, Vietnamese stuff. It was like, that's another red flag. So if there's like,
yeah, if it's not dedicated,
yeah, if there's like a zillion cuisines, then you're like, which one are you an expert on? You know,
does anyone know how to actually pronounce that? Like I hear pho, I hear fa, I hear pho. So every time I try to just like mumble it, I'm like, I like this, you know, pho, just to kind of mumble through it. Cause I'm like, I don't know specifically how to pronounce it. I'm pretty sure pho is dead wrong. So it's like, fa or fa. I'm like, it's
I'm a colonizer. I'm a colonizer, so I'm gonna change their language no matter what they say.
Well, does anyone know what it should be? When in Rome.
I don't know. I can text my friend who's Vietnamese and ask her. I mean, she'll
tell me. How's she gonna text you back a pronunciation?
No, she'll never
send a voicemail. Then you have to get off the phone with us.
Well, that's true.
I do want to know. I can look this up. Hang on.
I mean, you could probably look this up on the internet.
I should have done this years ago. Pronounce. I don't have so much time today. All right.
Yeah. While you're looking that
it
up,
says
so, yeah,
pho.
They had,
it says pho. It's
pho. Pho.
Yeah. Like, that's so pho. Weird. Like if
Why
it
is
sounds
it
like
weird?
I'm like,
it's their language. Are you trying to?
Because it's pho, but it sounds like I'm about to cuss. Like, I like some pho, please. That's weird.
Pho this.
I think. See? I think like pho.
See how that goes?
That's so weird. Pho. All right, well. There's a lesson for today, everyone. Yeah, we don't have. Man, when I lived in Seattle, like, oh, we had the best. Places. But man, it was so good. And here where I am, there's not a lot. We have to go to like Tampa.
Yeah, see, like this place was like, you know, but like, so for instance, when you make summer rolls, like Thai summer rolls, and these are the things that are like not fried, right?
They're, yeah, like the spring rolls, yeah.
And they've got, yeah,
Well, yeah, spring rolls are fine. These are not fries.
Okay.
These are just raw.
I know what you mean. Yeah. With, so like, anyway, the peanut sauce?
But, like, yeah, so, like, the way you make those traditionally, and again, I'm, you know, I have a Thai relative, so I know this for a fact, is that you use rice wine vinegar to soak the noodles in. So there's, like, the little thin rice noodles. The way that you hydrate those noodles is not with water, it's with rice vinegar, so that there's an acid complement to that dish. And then there should be leaves of basil with the shrimp and the lettuce. And again, the lettuce is also, again, tossed in the rice wine vinegar. And, you know, if you're my wife's cousin's wife, then, you know, she uses a couple of other spices that she won't tell us in the lettuce. So it's kind of irritating.
Well, I have one comment on one question and then a comment to get us back on track. So, or I guess two questions.
Okay.
So did you say you had a Thai relative?
Yeah. Yeah.
I thought you said she was Korean, or do you have one of each?
I got a Korean, Japanese, and a Thai relative.
The same one or different?
Somebody else. No, all different. All I need to do is have somebody else marry a Chinese lady and a Filipino. We've got the entire Asia covered for the most part.
If you adopt me as your son, I can bring one of those along.
All right, there you go. All right. Yeah, you can bring a Filipino lady. Filipina? I don't know.
Technically, it's so weird. Yeah, my wife's like right here. I could ask her. But no, because it's like if you're talking very in like generic terms, it's like, oh, you know, like Filipinos. Like, just people from the country of the Philippines. But then if you want to get specific, it's like Filipino is male and Filipina is girl. But it's like, I take more care to, like, do that than they do. It's like, nah, there's Filipino, they're Filipino. It's like, in Mexico, it's like, you know, what is it? Like, señor and, or, no, not señor. The male and female, what is it in Spanish?
Señorita.
No, that it's not the señorita thing. It was, crap. Yeah. It's just like the, no, it's not. Nothing with an S. It's like a whole different.
Are you talking about word. Latina versus Latin?
Yeah. That's it. Like,
that's
yeah.
Not
so
American
it's like.
Expression.
Well, whatever it is, it's the same idea. It's like, you know, if they're like, oh, Latinos, but then if it's specific, it's like, you know, Latino would be man, Latina would be girl. But it, anyways, okay, yeah. So back on track, is Genesis 9, speaking of food, about cannibalism? Someone wants to know.
What in the world transition was that? We're talking about like my relatives and our amazing potlucks, and so I get Japanese and Korean and Thai food at Christmas time, and then we go to cannibalism?
That's the question. All right, let's.
I'm not sure where that's coming from. That's kind of out of the blue.
It's coming from someone that don't want to be named. All right. It seems the context is. It seems the context is food. What you
Genesis
can and cannot
what?
Eat.
It's 30 verses.
I know. Do we got to read the whole thing? Genesis 9. Let's just scroll down and see if we can find the part about food. I'm going to go out on a limb and say it is not cannibalism, but all right. Okay, so, yeah. Give me some verses, person who was messaging me.
I mean, this is the Noahic covenant in Genesis 9.
Okay.
Yeah, Genesis 9 is basically God making a covenant with humanity.
No, the beginning.
Never destroyed the earth by
okay.
Flood.
And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful, multiply, and fill the earth. The fear of you and the dread will be upon every beast of the earth and upon every bird of the heavens, upon everything that creeps on the ground and all fish in the sea. Into your hand they are delivered. Every morning. Okay, so is that what you're talking about? Okay, so the fear of you and the dread of you shall be upon every beast of the earth, okay, not humans, and upon every bird of the heavens, not humans, and upon everything that creeps on the ground and all the fish of the sea, not humans, into your hand they are delivered. Every morning every moving thing that lives shall be food for you. Okay, so every moving thing that lives, if we're talking about humans there, I would say if you can twist it that far to mean humans, you can start a cult. No, that is not talking about humans.
Yeah, that's
so.
It's
reading
in
context.
It's literally in the context of animals. It's literally
beast. Yeah,
literally talking about the context of animals.
But you shall not But you shall not eat flesh with its life, that is, its blood. And for your lifeblood, I will require a reckoning from every beast. I will require it. I will require it, and from man. Is that where you're thinking about that? Okay, so and you shall not eat flesh with the lifeblood. And for your lifeblood, I will require a reckoning from every beast. So no, there's no way you can get cannibalism out of that either. This would be really easy if they just gave me the verse they were thinking about it. Whoever sheds the blood of the man, by man shall his blood be shed, for God made man in his own image. Yeah, so my conclusion is Genesis 9 is not talking about cannibals. Oh, 9-1 the beginning. 9-1?
Yeah, I mean, I can anonymous. You know.
And God blessed Noah and his sons and said to them, be fruitful and multiply and fill the earth. Yeah, there's nothing about even eating anything in there. You're drunk, caller. Pastor Mark, have you ever got that question if Genesis 9 is talking about cannibalism? All right. What else we got?
Well, everybody knows that Pastor Mark retains his youthful vigor by drinking the blood of children, right? So isn't that what independent Baptists do? I've heard this from somebody.
That's pretty heavy.
Man.
I'm going to go on a limb and say Pastor Mark does not do that. But, thoughts on the mid-tribbers being all excited about the red heifer? There you go, Chris.
Yeah, they're just idiots.
Make it longer so we have more to talk about.
Why do you want me to talk about this? This
I don't. They ask it in chat.
All right.
Yeah, we talked about this yesterday. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. So as long as I've been a Christian, and Pastor Mark can probably attest to this, there has been one whack job or another talking about, oh, the ashes of the red heifer. They've gotten a red heifer. They've bred one finally. Because they were somehow extinct, and we brought them back Jurassic Park style. And now we're going to be able to get the red heifer, and we're going to be able to start the sacrificial system in the temple in Jerusalem. If we can just get rid of the pesky Muslims and take down the Dome of the Rock, we'll rebuild the temple, and the Jews can go back to the sacrificial system. Yeah, that's what those dummies think. It's dumb.
What's your actual view on that? Like, before, I think as far as Bible, like, you know, prophecy and stuff goes, like, nothing has to, there's no other prophecy that has to happen before, like, the rapture of the church, right? You do believe in the rapture, right? I think, yes?
Yes, I do. Yeah, I don't think there's anything on the prophetic calendar.
Yeah, so, like, do you think, so what do you think about like the whole Dome of the Rock stuff? Do you think, inevitably if the time goes on long enough, eventually something's going to happen because it's just there and there's a tension, even though it has nothing to do with prophecy in your view, or, there's absolutely no significance whatsoever other than maybe like spiritually, but maybe politically, if people start fighting over it, or like, what do you think any significance is?
There's no spiritual or biblical significance to any of it. I think that that's interesting. I think that it's just, I don't really want to get into Darbyism and.
So is it the red heifer people or a wider branch that branches out from that believe? I got a lot of feedback from me that believes that. It's going to be somewhere around like the Antichrist who will come and like basically have a part in rebuilding the third temple. And at that point, everyone's going to think like, you know, it's a really good thing. And then it'll be like, hey, by the way, I'm God, worship me. Is it just the red heifer people that believe that? Or is it the red heifer people believe that too, but then a wider branch believe the Antichrist temple thing, not necessarily the red heifer thing?
I mean, yeah, it's all kind of related, but like the red heifer thing is a different branch, right? So like
So it's both never groups been... will believe the temple thing, but only one group will really buy into the red heifer thing.
Right. The red heifer thing is like, you know, a bunch of charismatic nonsense that bled into Baptist nonsense that bled into other nonsense.
So
that's the short story. I mean, we could go into who John Darby was, and we can go into like all of the nonsense beginnings of dispensationalism. And I am a dispensationalist, but there's a lot of nonsense in dispensationalism. So,
well, yeah. Why don't you give us a little rundown? But first, are you one of the people that believe the Antichrist will have anything to do with like the Dome of the Rock type thing, or you don't go that far?
I don't go that far. So we don't know anything about it.
Yeah, so someone also was, yeah, like Serendipity was getting a bunch of crap because I guess she said she was a dispensationalist and all the Calvinists like were giving her a hard time. But then you're also like, you know, a chief Calvinist. I don't think any of your Calvinist brethren pronounce heresy on you. But you also say you're a dispensationalist. So do you define it in a way that they're like, yes, that's fine? And she defines it in a way that it's not fine? Or like, how do you get to use the title and seem okay, but other people, it's apparently bad?
So, okay, here's part of the problem is Dippity's been taught a whole bunch of nonsense that she will die on that hill. And I just reject all that stuff wholesale. So like,
well, can you give us a rundown? Like maybe not her specifically, but right. I mean, you know, for people that are like, what is dispensationalism? Like
you've got the Hagee kind that believes in different salvations. Yeah. Right, so John Hagee would be closest to where Dippity is at, as far as I understand. I mean, I haven't had a protracted conversation with her about it, but yeah, I mean, it's that kind of.
Well, what's the best way to just give a quick overview? So, like, there's like boil it down to the biggest kinds. Like one that everyone, most of us would agree is wrong is, you know, there's different ways of salvation. Like Gentiles have one way to salvation, Jews have another way, right? And that would be way wrong. But then there's other kinds from there that are not such a big deal. Is that a fair place to start?
Or... sure. I kind of think they're unrelated, but, you know, okay. So Darbyism and Schofield and all these other cats that founded the seminary that my wife went to, that's fantastic. Dallas Theological Seminary is kind of the dispensationalist seminary, and then Master Seminary is behind that as well. But yeah, I mean, it's the idea that God reveals his redemptive plan in different time periods in different ways. And this is just true on the face of things because there's a time before Christ and there's a time when Christ came. It's not like Christ just came like 10 seconds after Adam fell. You know, there is a flow to redemptive history. And so what Darby did, though, is he divided this redemptive history into seven, quote-unquote, dispensations. And the problem that Darby ran across and that Darbyites run across all the time, and again, this had to do with, like, restorationism and restoring the true church and, you know, got into Jehovah's Witnesses and Mormons and, like, it spawned basically all of this crap, right? And so... this is why people are so bitter about dispensationalism is that it caused a balkanization within the Reformed community and out into the Wesleyan community. And so the Wesleyans bought it hook, line, and sinker. The Reformed did not. And so a lot of the rift between Reformed and Wesleyan came from dispensationalism as well, not just Calvinism. So it's a whole mess. And I think that, like, I'm a Reformed Baptist is the closest thing. Like, I would be LBC, London Baptist Confession. But I think that Darbyism has really muddied the waters. I am a dispensationalist in terms of I'm what people are provisionally calling covenantal dispensationalism, which, you know, is widely mocked by the Presbyterians. What does that even mean? That's word salad, yada, 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 because they just their understanding of dispensationalism starts and ends with Darbyism. So, again, it is a very cool discussion. Like, if you wanted to do, like, a very special Saturday edition of Ask a Christian, and you and I could just go through with, like, you know, a few pages of notes instead of me just riffing off the top of my head.
Y'all ain't gonna do nothing but kick down the people with the truth.
Well, maybe you shouldn't interrupt and it wouldn't happen. So is the prevailing thought that Darby was good, but people took what Darby did and completely messed it up, or Darby was also bad?
Darby was a heretic.
And what was the thing the, like the main points that make Darby so, like, what did everyone believe before Darby? And then what did Darby do that was different that everyone's like, you're a heretic?
So everyone, well, okay. It was kind of a mixed bag with eschatology all through the like 17th and 18th centuries in Reformed theology. Because you got to remember, Wesleyanism wasn't even a thing until the 1700s. So you've got a couple hundred years where there's no such thing as like Arminians, for instance. You know, like, so essentially eschatology was kind of borrowed from the Roman Catholic Church and then developed over time to where you get like amillennialism. People went back to Augustine, who first proffered the idea of amillennialism. Before Augustine, there was historic premillennialism, you know, and so Darby just took that to the extreme. And he started looking in the book of Revelation and started talking about the beasts and started relating those to current times and trying to unlock the secrets of Revelation. Whenever somebody wants to, quote unquote, unlock the secrets of Revelation, just run the other direction. It's really dumb.
Okay. And so when you say Darby was a heretic, was that like he believes different than you, heretic, or like heretic by like anyone's standards?
It's weird. Like Clubhouse kicks me out of rooms sometimes.
Oh, maybe that's what happened to Agape too.
I was just sitting there, and then all of a sudden, I was like, "You went silent," and I was like, "Did?" And then I
did
went
you hear what I said?
Phone. No, I didn't hear it at all.
Oh, I said when you say Darby is a heretic, I said, "Is that like he doesn't believe like you heretic, or like he was like legit heretic by anyone's standards?"
He was a legit heretic by anyone's standards. He started denying covenants and he started doing, I mean, just, you know, spawning all kinds of nonsense. So, I mean, in terms of his specific theology, you can look him up. He wrote a bunch of books.
Yeah. There's like a Darby Bible, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you know, there's, so, you know, he was extremely, let's just say he was extremely problematic in the annals of American Christianity. If you want to read more about him, from like a top line view, Hannah's book, Invitation to Church History, American Edition, deals with him pretty well. And so pretty even handedly, because again, Hannah's coming from a dispensational camp, and he even handedly deals with Darby and who Darby was.
So would you say he's like, I don't know, like one of the people, like sometimes you put him in category, like, you know, they're in wild heresy, but you know, still probably saved. They're just severely misled. Or like, I mean, obviously he didn't reject Christ, right? So like, would he be heretic as in still saved, like just in the bad, bad teaching, or heretic, like apostate, like out of the faith type thing in your view?
I have no idea. I mean, like, you know, I'm not going to say like,
based on what the things he said. I mean, obviously.
Based on some of the things he said, I would really question his, I would absolutely question his, you know, his, if his faith was truly in the real God of the Bible.
Well, I mean, I imagine he held the things, right? Like Jesus is God, like, you know, the resurrection, like the Trinity, I imagine, right? Like he probably held.
Maybe. You know, yeah, I mean, no, Darby did hold the Trinity and a couple other things. It's just that some of his stuff was so problematic, again, that like, I, you know, I have to question, like, really? Like, you know, so I don't know. I'm not a huge Darby fan. I mean, I know other people will come in here and declare me a heretic for saying Darby is not great and the best thing since sliced bread. You know,
every time I hear Darby, I just think of the elf from Harry Potter. Makes me laugh.
I didn't know who that was. Okay.
Oh, well, it's an elf in Harry Potter. Darby dies.
Okay. Is that good? Should Darby have died?
It was like a big spoiler. Back, you know, like 12, 20, whatever years ago when it came out, people got really mad. They're like, Darby dies. It's like, what? He spoiled the book. Like, if you would have said it to Steph, like, didn't she say that? Did someone tell her, like, whenever she was reading the books, you know, in school or whatever? Like, that would be one of the things. If she was in here, you'd be like, hey, did you cry if someone spoiled, like, you know, Darby dies? She'd be like, yes, it was the worst day of my life.
Oh, my gosh. So much email. Sure. But yeah, Darby, I mean, so Stephen Nichols has a great series on American Christianity. I would highly recommend at ligonier.org. If you just want to listen to something in the background while you're working, like he has a great American church history overview and who all these characters were and Finney. See, like for instance, Darby wasn't as bad as Finney. Finney was an absolute
Charles Finney? Or
Charles Finney, yes. Charles Finney was an absolute heretic, non-Christian.
All I know about him is his first name is Charles.
Yeah,
that's about all I know.
Yeah, Charles Finney was an absolute raging non-Christian heretic.
How so?
Well, because, I mean, he believed in a work salvation. He denied Christ. I mean, like, all kinds of things. Like, he was a whack job. And people today revere Finney. You know,
they don't know, or
they just don't care.
Oh,
yeah. No, he's, you know, he's fine. I mean, you can read his writings. He's not fine. I don't know.
I mean, if someone would have said, "Hey, there's a Finney Study Bible," I'd be like, "Oh, I know that name. Probably fine."
Yeah, yeah. So Darby wasn't as bad as Finney. Well, just I'll say that.
Were they around the same time, or
no? No. Darby was later than Finney. I mean, I don't know. I'd have to look it up. I honestly don't remember because I have them in two different categories in my head. Like Second Great Awakening, Charles Finney is a category in my head. And I believe, And I know that Darby was around during Restorationism. They may have some overlap. In fact, I don't even know if they ever met. They may, I don't know if they were alive at the same time or if they ever met. I have no idea.
Hello, Doctor. What's up?
Hello. Hello, everyone.
Are you a medicine doctor or a PhD doctor?
For a long time.
Huh?
I am certified by US MLE. So I'm a medical doctor. Also, I have PhD training.
Huh. How's it going?
So what's going on today?
Oh, talking about, I guess, church history?
Oh, yes. Like,
I'm just so starved for someone to talk that I'm going down this road today where I normally, like, beat my head against the wall. I'm just like, tell me more. Tell me more.
So you've never met Dr. Wang?
No, I have. I just didn't. I never asked about his medical stuff.
Oh, yeah, it's not medical stuff. He's not a real doctor. The atheists went and found him out and that he doesn't have any real degrees and he made it all up. And yeah.
Wait, what about he just said? So he's not.
He's not being truthful.
So you are so dishonest. You know, atheist is the one I usually fight with them. When they say something bad about me, that prove I'm good.
I mean, no.
You well, bad, how come? Are
they
you,
say
are
bad
you
stuff
Christian?
About me all the time. You're not a Christian either. You're a mental patient.
Okay, well, before I just let you guys fight real fast, I guess where I'm coming from is, you know, trust but verify. But since, you know, if the guy says he's a medical doctor, I'm currently in no need of a medical doctor. So, you know, I'm not going to, like, call upon his services. So I don't really care. Anyways, that's where I am. I was just making a conversation. Didn't mean to open a can of worms, but yeah, you guys can fight about who the true Christian is.
Who are you? What's your real name?
Who, Chris?
No, I mean Dad. I'm a Daddy Christian. That was so so disgusting.
Just call that's me Daddy again. That's fantastic.
Who maybe are we should you? Just say. Maybe we should just say hi to
Who's
Ron.
Who's your real name?
What's up, Ron?
Dad, you share
Yo,
your
what's
real
up,
name
guys?
For people.
Ron, save us, Ron.
Everybody argue today. Clubhouse should just be more
that's
like
right.
The argument house.
So how come you use atheist to, you know?
What did you say?
We don't know. What's up, Ron? How are you doing?
Oh, nothing. I'm good, man. I'm just listening to everybody argue. Today's the day for arguing. And yesterday was too, and tomorrow will be as well. This is great.
We've been doing pretty good until right now. Do you have anything to give us a topic where we may not argue? Or?
You should apologize. Yes, stop. Daddy Christopher, stop insulting people.
All right, well, I guess we're fighting about who has medical credentials and who's a real Christian and what Chris's real name is.
Oh, nobody cares about any of that stuff, guys.
That's what I thought.
Nobody gives a shit what you guys think about
that's right.
Like that.
That's just insulting.
Okay, so let's talk about this. What is it called? The help me out. I'm not real good with this. It's called the firmament. Yeah, can you guys elaborate on that?
I'm sure these other guys have something to say, but my understanding would be like back in the, and that doctor, yeah, when you're not talking mute, cause I hear feedback and stuff from you. It's distracting, but yeah. So like in the early days, people would say it didn't rain on the earth. It was just like a heavy dew and type stuff. And there was some type of firmament, which may be interpreted as like a heavier atmosphere or like more of an ozone layer in science speak. So that could be what they're talking about. And I think that is probably correct. That it was something like that. It was more of a heavy, thick atmosphere. But commonly what people talk about when they mention the firmament now, not in that context, is some kind of flat earth world where there's a firmament dome and stuff like that. And I can't get there. Anyone?
All right, good answer. Next question. I have another question. How old is the earth?
Anywhere from it doesn't technically exist, and this is a figment of our imagination, to like 4 or 5 billion years old. I personally am fine anywhere between people doing some math that I would disagree with. But if they say it's a young earth created in a mature state because God just threw it out there as, you know, his own special one-off creation, like I believe humans, then okay, fine. I'm not really convinced, but fine. And 4.5 billion years old, I'm more at peace with, knowing that, you know, I could also be wrong and it doesn't matter.
Okay, thanks for your answers. I just was curious if anybody in here was, because I'd like to hear the argument that the earth, I heard this from, oh my God, I'll try to think of his name, just give me a minute, but something about the earth.
You're cutting out pretty bad. Are you able to get a better signal? Like we didn't hear anything. If you were going to say you wanted to hear from someone who thought the earth was young, I know Chris does. Can you somehow confirm if that's what you're asking? Well, I didn't hear his question because he cut out, but let's just assume that was his question. Chris, why is the earth 6,000 years old?
Because we have no reason to believe that it is not 6,000 years old.
Could it be 7,000 years or 6,500 years?
Between 6,000, 10,000, 12,000, something like that, whatevs.
Okay, so like a low-end 6, high-end 12?
Sure, why not?
Let me talk about the aging. Like scientific aging only developed the last several decades who got a Nobel Prize. You can't tell exactly the age of the Earth or even the universe. If you look at the Genesis is in the beginning when God created the heavens and the Earth. So they think the Earth was appeared first. They don't have a telescope. They saw the star, the moon, just a light for the Earth, on the light in the evening. So only after like a 17th century, so when Galileo used a telescope, when you take a look at the star, so even earlier, the real stars are not stars. They are much bigger than Earth, many of them. Yes, that's well, right.
And I also think, like, you know, even in Genesis 1:1, right? Like, I think it would not be great to like push super hard back on what I'm about to say from either side, because I mean there is a gap, not a gap theory, not like Genesis 1 and Genesis 2, not like that kind of gap, but like in the way it's written. Like imagine it how, you know, it doesn't have verse numbers.
Yeah.
So, you know, in the beginning, God created the heavens and the earth. The earth was without form and void, and darkness was over the face of the deep, and the Spirit of God was hovering over the face of the water. So I'm thinking, if God creates the heavens and the earth, there's a dark, giant globe, not plane, just sitting there, right? So then I see on one interpretation, they just read straight through and think at that very same moment, God says, let there be light, and that's day one. But if it was different and there's just a, God creates the heaven and the earth, there's like a, just a globe sitting there dark for, I don't know, trillions of years, billions of years, whatever, a long, long time, maybe not trillions, but you know what I mean. And yeah. Then God's like, okay, let's start making some days. All right, dark earth that's been sitting there for billions of years, let there be light, and said it was good, and that's day one. So anyone who reads that any of those ways, I think it would be not super great to push back hard, because that's a fair interpretation either way, I think. What do you think, Chris? I'm right. You concede. Amazing. Dr.
Yeah.
What do you
think? No, I mean, my pushback would just simply be reading the rest of the text of Genesis 1 through 11 exegetically. You know, I mean, we don't have any reason to think that there was a gap when it says, let there be light. This is the very first act of creation. It's not as if that there was all of this other stuff that occurred prior to that creation. And it's not as if the universe is eternal. And so, you know, I mean, like for the atheists, like our buddy Ron at Random there, they have to take either an eternal universe view or they have to, you know, be stuck in regression. So, you know, they've got two really bad options available to them without a creator. That's how I would push back on that.
Well, I also think, to be fair to young Earth, like if you say, you know, when God created the heavens and the earth, and he says, let there be light, the heavens and the earth was a precursor. Like maybe it was just telling us what's coming. It wasn't like done at that moment. He was like, you have to describe what came first, but still it's not like in chronological order. So it's like, okay, God creates the heavens and the earth. How did he do that? Well, let there be light. And perhaps that's what people call the Big Bang. So at that moment, the universe has its existence and matter bursts forth, but also because he creates the heavens. I mean, I think an interpretation of heavens there would be, you know, that kind of heavens, like space stuff, and the earth. So yes, space stuff, comets, matter, all the stuff is shooting out. At the same time, God creates this giant globe, just special on his own. He's like, all this other stuff can go wherever it wants. I'm going to, you know, handcraft this earth, and I'm going to set it right there. And then everything else just kind of flows around it over time. I think, to the young earth side, that, I mean, I wouldn't push back super hard if someone said something like that.
So not only correct interpretation is telling them at that time when the Bible was writing, maybe several thousand years ago or sometime, there's no dating technology. They have no idea. Many stars are much, much older than Earth. So it says on the fourth day, God created the stars, the moon, etc. So that's very, very, it's probably truthful when they're writing, but it is not scientifically understood about the creation of the universe. And now we know the universe is 14 something years, you know, billion years, 14 billion years.
And Pastor Mark, in chat, just to make sure we're on the same page, I wasn't saying like a gap theory or anything like that. I was saying a gap in the writing. Maybe that's what you meant too, just to be clear. Yeah, I wasn't saying anything about like the gap theory. There could be a gap in the writing.
Let me see if I
can understand your argument. Your argument is that, you know, God created the heavens and the earth, and that's like an overarching statement. And then the first step of that is, and God said, let there be light. Is that so? It's like, hey, here's a introduction. God created the heavens and the earth, and step one, let there be light. That's what you're saying?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not saying that's what I believe. I'm saying that's, yes, that argument I was making is what I was saying.
So let me just continue a little bit about my thought. My understanding to the Genesis, there are two versions of Genesis, actually. So I'm not going to argue with anyone because this is true. Because my understanding is if you are truly a Christian or you believe in God, which means you acknowledge their discrepancy or their inaccurate in the Genesis or in the Bible, I mean, that's true. But you still believe in God, you still believe in Jesus Christ. That's the real issue to differentiate if you are truly Christian, if you truly believer, or you are just a believer, right? But when when we acknowledge the inaccurate in that time back to thousands of years, we acknowledge it, but we still believe it. What do we believe? We believe in the theology.
Yeah, I don't think anyone's using this to say who is or isn't a Christian. That comes from other stuff. Yeah, we're just talking about this. But yeah, Chris, are you processing that, or were you just getting a handle on what I was saying?
I mean, for the record, I have no idea what he's even talking about.
No, me. The thing you asked.
Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, I'm not... the whole young Earth, old Earth thing, it just bugs me. I think, you know, for 1900 years, everybody was young Earth, and then a bunch of pagan scientists come around and say, nah, the Earth is really old, and you Christians are dumb. And so then Christians are all like, oh, we can't be dumb, so...
So this is the one way the atheists always use it to attack. So I'm very good at counter-attack them. So that's why they hate me so much, the atheists. So they always trying to, you know, they try to like downplay me through my character. To attack my character rather than the real scientific issue or the facts of the Bible.
Yeah, someone writes, so God could have made it look old. I think that's like, oh goodness, I'm going to channel Chris. That's a cope. So, I mean, it could have been that way, right? That's some like elaborate test of faith to like a Job type thing to see what people are going to do. But I personally, that would be like one of the least things I would believe is that God like had to make the earth look old. I think, you know, if God just made the earth and it happened to be a complete earth and, you know, it looks old because of that, like God just made the thing and it is old. It's not like, because when you say God made it look old, that goes to like an intent, right? Which kind of makes it feel like a cope, because it's like, oh, well, God had to make it look this way to deceive the unbeliever. That's a really hard one for me to grasp, but if God is just like, hey, all these other planets are going to take a while to form, I want this planet to form right now, done, formed. And because it just formed, you know, because God said form, then I think that's an easier way of saying it, because it just is old. It is already completed. How old is Adam? Wasn't he like nine? Yeah. How old was Adam? Seven?
I'm sorry?
How old was Adam? I can't remember. Was it 600, 700?
Yeah, they could have been using it in like 1,000 years.
No, what's the Bible say Adam was? He lived how long?
You even lived many hundreds of years easier. Very easy when I'm talking. But we don't know. Yeah. It's very long. They live much, much longer than we are now.
Adam was Adam created? Like Adam was created when the Bible was created. Or when the Bible says it was created, what it was like?
I think Genesis says that he was like 900-ish.
Yeah, I thought that wasn't going to be my guess, but then that was like Methuselah, right? I guess were they both that old?
If you want my opinion, I don't think that.
Oh, I'm sure you don't. Like 35 and died. 35 and died of infection, right?
Yeah, they said that is
probably didn't exist. Would be my opinion.
Yeah. He said Adam lived 930 years. So almost 1,000 years, 930 years. Up to the 56.
Oh, okay. Oh, yeah. That's a good point. Okay. So now I figured out what the guy is chatting to me. Okay. He's saying that, yeah, it's kind of along the old earth idea. Like if God just created the earth, boom, the earth looks old because it's already just created, like in fast forward. And he says, how old was Adam when he's created? I get what you're saying. So it's the same kind of argument or that can be applied. Adam wasn't created as a baby. Adam was created as an adult. There you go. It'd be easier if people could just talk. Well, Random, do you have any other topics on your mind? I think this is covered.
Are we done with this one?
I believe so.
Because I could ask questions so that we're not done with this one.
I'm done with this one.
Got it. That's fine.
I mean, unless there's something you just really want to ask. Did Adam have a belly button like that?
I will forego my question.
Well, I mean, if you actually care, let's go ahead. But I mean, if you're just like,
my question is, what is preventing in some of these people's minds, what is preventing the Earth from being 4.3 billion years?
Well, I mean, Chris's reasoning was people have believed it for 1900 years. So, why cop to scientists who say, no, it's older. Just, you know, you've always believed it's 1900 years. Just keep believing it's 1900 years. That's not to say every Christian ever believed it was a young Earth. I'm sure there was someone that thought maybe it's older. I mean, I think in Judaism, I think, you know, they kind of have the allowance for like Genesis 1 and Genesis 2 as, you know, some event happening between the creation of the Earth and then like a reprovisioning of the Earth in Genesis 2. So, I mean, I think in Judaism, like, there's some allowance there that even they allot for the potential of an old Earth. But according to Chris, I think that's his answer. Is that your answer, Chris? Yes, Nate, you're amazing. You don't need to read a book today. All right, Random. I think that's the answer that you would get from Chris.
Sunday, okay, another question. I have a related question. Is how many generations since Adam's, or they counted in the Bible?
I don't know what that has to do with anything.
Oh, this is very important, actually.
Well, no, because this whole discussion is before Adam was created. So, like, we're talking in the realm of, like, before Adam was even created. So if we're trying to date the age of the Earth by generations, we're talking before any people were created.
I think there was two versions in Genesis before Adam's. That was the first day is like a 7 days creation. And the other one is say God created the human in his likeness. That was God created human first. It's probably after creating the Earth, or somebody say God's that was Earth and then God's created. So they call the second before Adam's. In that creation, they didn't mention the name of Adam's. They say God's created a human. They use a rib to create a companion. Don't they call him Adam and Eve?
I honestly didn't follow that very well, but I heard Random also say something at the same time you were speaking too. Did you say you had another question, Random?
Are you trying to follow my question?
I'm honestly having trouble following it, but I we were in the middle of talking to Random, though. I wanted to, because he had Random, what's up, Random? Please speak.
Yeah, okay, sorry. I'm shuffling things in my hand. I'm just really curious, because, I mean, not that the like, it's the be-all, end-all, but
now you're cutting out. I'm going to need you to go hug your router.
Trying to make sure that I have good reception. Sorry. We've seen also changes in those distant stars as well. And so therein lies my question, like, did he make the change like a nova or a supernova? Did God make that changing mid everything?
Not quite sure I follow. Like, like all the stuff happening in space, like did God orchestrate every single thing?
Right. Well, there was the argument of like mature creation.
Yeah.
And when we talk about mature creation in relation to the distant starlight, it's essentially like, oh, it's creating the light already on the way. But my question is, like, does that also apply to, like, celestial bodies that we've seen change that would be that distant starlight as well?
That's interesting. There's no way to know that. So, I mean, just hypothesizing, though, I would think that, you know, if let's just say God says, let there be light, and that's what science calls the Big Bang. So everything, like, you know, at a certain point, the singularity, whatever, God just says, okay, let's get stuff going. And everything starts bursting forth, all matter, from this very singular spot. Let's just say that. And then while that's going on, you know, the idea of an old Earth, in one scenario would be, while all this other stuff is just randomly happening, like, you know, ultimately God is in control, but it's not like he's taking the time to be like, okay, star, you go here, star, you go over there. He's just like, do your thing, go. And he specifically takes time to, you know, craft the Earth and put that exactly where he wants it. And then I guess another scenario would be, yeah, he speeds everything up and, like, you know, I don't know, fast forward time. So it's like, okay, Earth, go here. Everything else be where it should be, assuming you moved at the same time I was doing Earth. So, I mean, there is no way to know that. But, I mean, I would think it's got to be, like, one of those two or maybe another scenario. It would be inconsequential. Like, the point is, there would be a way to come up with a scenario for whatever you needed to work. It's just, is it true? And we have no idea. Like, that's layers and layers deeper than anything the Bible makes reference to.
Fair enough.
Has Chris forsaken us?
I'm about to forsake you all. I'm sorry. I haven't been here for very long, but I got some stuff to do.
Yeah, I actually meant for this to be a short day, so maybe just a few more minutes. But hey, Saint, what's up? Mario, it's been a while. Anyone else want to say anything quickly before I need to take off? No? All right. Well, Doctor, you want to make any final point before I run?
Oh, you're closing? Oh, thank you.
Yeah, today's a short day. Yeah, I've got to actually do some stuff.
Yeah. Hopefully, see you guys again. Thank you. Bye.
Well, we went through a lot of topics. All right. Take care, everyone. See you guys later. Until tomorrow.